Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaBusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do With It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon and good morning to you, those folks on the West Coast. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. I'm here with my friend and guest today, and John Cannon, and we're going to talk today about business structure and business dynamics and business plans. And I'll introduce John more formally here in just a second. The Executive Group is hosting this show. The Executive Group is a firm I started 20 years ago. We work in organizational development and strategic planning. And I guess if you had to kind of sum up what we do, we help organizations link their human capital with their strategic intent. And today and next week, we're going to be talking about strategic intent, business strategy, business design, pitfalls of strategic planning, all the things that you might be interested in as a business owner in moving your company forward. I started the Executive Group 20 years ago with the intent of helping organizations become more effective in not only their business endeavors, but their people and their selection endeavors. And as I spend this week with my friend and guest, John Gannon, and next week, we're going to talk about how you help get your business on track. And as we move that forward, we've worked with a number of companies along a number of different sizes of organizations, and John will give you some of his background and the size of companies he's worked with. But as we look at strategic planning, how do we help companies understand, in some ways, in some cases, get out of their own way? The format of the show is based on the concepts of the book, and the book is also called What's Leadership Got to Do With It, which should be available for print somewhere near the close of the end of the of our show, which is last 15 weeks in length, which takes us through, I think, around the 19th or 20th of December, for those of you who are listening. But the premise is built on the concepts of the book and what I call the fundamental five, and that is that if your business is going to be successful, not only is today and next week's program going to be crucial to listening in on, but our first show and the first chapter of the book, we devoted to spending time on culture and had a couple of guests there of people we work with in terms of their corporate culture. The second and third show, we interview one of our clients where we worked on the selection and employee development side and the criticalness of the individual dynamics, which is chapter two. Last week's session was along the lines of team dynamics and how teams play well together. The fourth fundamental is your business plan, and the fifth fundamental of a successful business is the structure and metrics that you use to run it. But the interesting thing is that as John and I hooked up, we found we had a lot of things in common with our sales and marketing background and some of our experiences. So, John, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself? And John and I worked together when he was at Cooper Tools, and again when he was with a firm called Dräger, a German company. So, John, introduce yourself and a quick background, and kind of take it from there.
Well, I'm John Gannon, and I have followed an international business track for most of my career, having dragged my poor family to spots in Brazil, several different spots across the U.S., Quebec, France, and then back to the U.S. My training was in international business, and most of my time working has been with multinational organizations of various sizes. And it's interesting to note that now I'm, like Rick, involved in a smaller business and facing many of the same challenges that small business owners are facing across the U.S. today. And that principal one is in the area of strategic planning. How do you look yourself in the mirror, decide who you are, and then decide who you want to be when you grow up? So with, when I talk about my background, I first began with a firm, and a well-established industrial textile company that had just recently come off of a leveraged buyout back in the 80s when those things were popular, and they had jettisoned most of their businesses, sort of getting back to their core, getting back to the old in search of excellence discussion around stick to the knitting. And I went to work, when I went to work as a kid there, I went to work as in a group that was really their first point of diversification in almost a decade. So they had pretty much lost the inside ability, the ability within the company to set up and to plan around a small entrepreneurial business. And we tried to shoehorn a large company, established company strategic planning process and tried to shove that into a business that was small and quite entrepreneurial at its base.
So when you say small, John, what was the kind of the revenue stream of that particular?
Well, we when we began that business, we started from dollar one. We were actually an export business, a business that had been established a few years earlier over in Europe, and we brought it to the U.S. first as an import company, and then we established manufacturing in the Atlanta market. So we took it from dollar one up until, 10 years later, we were a $30, $35 million division of this New York Stock Exchange listed company. So pretty rapid growth, went through a rather long learning curve, but ultimately what we did in the strategic planning process was develop a methodology, at least on the offensive side. When I'm talking about the offensive side of the ball, I'm talking about the sales and marketing side. We decided that we needed to focus in four key areas for sales and marketing. The first was geography. Who are our customers and where are the customers? The second part was the vertical market piece, looking at studying the market attractiveness by industry, what industries or what vertical markets had opportunities for growth, which vertical markets were easily accessible. We took a look at the vertical markets and figured out where do we want to play. Then the third, after geography and vertical markets, we came up with what are the products that we have or we have in our pipeline or we can push through our pipeline of new product development as quickly as possible. Can we put out into the market that will support our geographical approach and the vertical markets that we thought were most accessible to us? So geography, vertical markets, and product. And then the final piece, the fourth piece, was the channel. Do we have the correct sales vehicles to approach the given geography, the vertical market, and the type of products that we want to sell? Do we want to be a direct sales organization and subcontract installations? The product that we were selling was dock equipment and industrial door equipment that are used in manufacturing facilities and those types of things, many different applications. So did we have the right channel that could support the sales, installation, and ultimately the aftermarket requirements of a highly technical product that was dependent upon being installed right the first time? So geography, vertical markets, product, and channel. Later on, as we got bigger, better, and smarter, we realized the value of having a well-established aftermarket presence, not only to be able to take care of the customers that we developed along the way, and I know that's a large portion of your book, Rick, but also as an opportunity for us to develop a recurring revenue stream that would support the business at a very lucrative level going forward. That was on the sales side. On the marketing side, we needed to develop marketing communication programs that would help us deliver the message that would support our efforts, of course, in geography, the vertical markets, the proper products, and the channels. What was the message that was going to be delivered to support our growth in each of those four areas? So those were some of the lessons learned, some of the hard lessons learned within our time in the building of this industrial door business. The interesting thing was that as I was being transferred then from the U.S. to my first general management role in outside Montreal, and then later in a general management role in France, we were able to take those four basic elements, geography, vertical market, product, and channel, and promote those same ways to look at the business in each of the geographical markets that we attempted to penetrate. So it's a process that is transferable to different areas around the world.
Yes.
Okay, John, you've been carrying the show for me, John. We lost internet. Did you realize you were carrying the show?
We'll keep going. As I learned some of those lessons, as first as a sales and marketing guy, and then as a general manager, we were able to translate that into a couple of other businesses. I mentioned taking it to other places in the world with that same formula in that same company, but also into a couple of other businesses. I had an opportunity to join a family-run business, a much smaller business than the New York Stock Exchange-listed company that I mentioned before. This family-run business had been very opportunistic. They were cash-rich, and they had succeeded in tying up a major big-box hardware store in the upper Midwest and gaining access to their millwork, their showroom floor at the millwork level in the area of residential doors.
So, John, we need to take a break here. So let's continue that conversation as we come back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You're listening live to the What's Leadership Got to Do With It with my friend and guest, John Gannon, and we'll be back after the break.
Comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my friend and associate, John Gannon, and we're talking about business strategy and business structure and strategic planning over this week and next week's shows. An interesting thing I read not too long ago was by 1955, the U.S. accounted for 75% of the world's gross national product, so there was really no need for strategic planning because there really wasn't a whole lot of competition. And it was pretty much true then that operationally, most organizations were strong operationally. But the interesting thing is in the last 40 years, we've lost huge chunks of market share to foreign competition. And this is at a time where strategic planning has been in the forefront of organizations and their strategic planning initiatives. And what was really interesting, and I sent this article to John, and we'll talk about it a little bit here, but what was really interesting was in an article today, an article called The Street, it talked about the seven most prolific deals that have gone bad in U.S. history. And one of those was Sony in 1989 bought Columbia Pictures for $4.8 billion. And over the next 5 years, they lost $3.2 billion in loss. Quaker Oats in 1994 bought Snapple for $1.7 billion. And within 3 years, they unloaded that unprofitable business unit off from $1.7 to $300 million to Treyarch Beverages. Another article in there was about how News Corp in 2005 bought MySpace for $585 million and by 2009 sold it off to Specific Media for $35 million. Mercedes-Benz in 1998 bought Chrysler for $40 billion, and after 10 years of bleeding money, they sold it to Capital Management for $6 billion. And there's several other examples in that article today, but you know, as you look at organizations and why businesses don't succeed and why most acquisitions don't take place, I did some research years ago on the Boston Consulting Group showed that over something like 60% of most acquisitions fail to ever reach their ROI. Well, so what's the problem then if strategic planning is such a huge piece that most organizations think they have down pat, why is it that so many things go awry? Well, a lot of it's lack of attention to detail, but one of the things that I kind of threw out to John was, you know, a budget's not a business plan, it's an operating plan, and that is that it's amazing to me how many businesses believe that their budget is their business plan. So, John, what's been your experience with some of the organizations you've worked for along that line?
Well, the thing that you always have to remember at the core is that it's just as difficult to acquire and integrate a good business as it is a bad business. So the challenge is always to acquire a company that is a strong operating company that in itself has got a clear message, a clear pathway to its own development. So if there are any loose, my feeling is if there are any loose ends in the strategic planning process on the company that's about to be acquired, those will be highlighted, magnified, and be exponentially more obvious once they're brought into the acquiring parent company.
Well, you know,
so buy a good business.
Yeah, well, and to that point, you know, with John's talking about his past history, my past history, I was a director of sales and marketing for a privately held family-run organization that was somewhat of a conglomerate, kind of a mixture of five different businesses in one, and was brought in, and we had some successful growth and successful results in the years I was there. And then the owner approached me and says, we're going to buy our competitor out of Michigan. And, oh, by the way, they're twice our size. And, oh, interesting enough, they're in Chapter 11. and I said, and we want to buy them. Why? He said, because they give us strategic growth in the markets we're trying to expand into. And my point of reference was is that without a lot of due diligence, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment here with John, and that is auditing what's there. But, you know, in the analysis I did and the feedback back to the owner, I said, you know, I think this is one of the poorest deals you'd ever want to get involved in because, first of all, you're probably going to have little, if any, inventory at all. You're going to have vendors who are going to have this on cash hold. You're going to have the good employees have already gone. and you're going to try to build this from scratch, and we're already short and lean in our management staff to be able to cover what we've got, let alone buy a company that's bankrupt twice our size that's in three other states that we're not. But the owner said, well, here's what we're going to do. He said, I'm going to go run that operation. You'll stay here and run this operation, and we'll figure out how to make it work. And a year later, as my prediction was, we were in cash flow problems. We didn't have inventory to supply either location. I left, the controller left, the operations manager left, and the owner wound up selling off everything he bought just to get back to where he needed to be. So it's without the proper planning or without the proper structure in place, you know, to John's point around, you know, the company he worked for that, you know, started a startup, and, you know, the business model, if not really careful, is critical. And I don't care whether you're the size of the firm I just referred to, the size of the firm John just referred to, or whether you're looking at the mega deals that were in that article today. The fact of the matter is businesses today are in trouble and poorly run by poor decisions because there's not enough emphasis placed on things in terms of what you really need to do. And even to the fact of in the book Good to Great, for those of you who've read that, Jim Collins' book, and I understand he's coming out with a sequel because some of those companies he thought were good to great are no longer good to great for various reasons, Circuit City being one of them. But as you look at the lack of real strategic prowess of organizations, it's really scary. And in 20 years of consulting of doing this, I'm glad I'm employed for myself and not working for some of the people that I've seen run companies, but it just begs the question of, is strategic planning really as effective as what it could be or should be? So, John, you've worked for some major, major organizations. What's been your take?
You see errors made in various different types of areas. Sometimes I started to talk about it earlier in the family-run business. They were operating, they had cash, and they were operating rather opportunistically without thinking ahead of what would happen in those four areas of importance that I had brought up. They did not think about what would happen 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years down the road as they went out and acquired a major new customer. What they expected to happen was to see some change in their sales and marketing, but ultimately it influenced the entire operation of the business. They could not deliver product the way they had previously delivered it. They could not package product. It changed their operational processes, and it changed their financial model. In working with a very large multinational in the industrial tool space, we were able to see a very top-down, and I think that's the example that you just gave, Rick, a very top-down strategic planning process, a process where the vision is being directed by one individual, presumably at the top, and he or she are telling everybody involved in the business or not communicating that vision properly to everybody else in the business, not getting input. And in the worst case, as you mentioned, Rick, not getting the buy-in from the people who were actually going to have to run the businesses that were acquired or moved into but through the strategic planning process. So there are errors that are made in this top-down approach also. When things go well, I think what you see is a marriage of the strategic elements, the strategic planning process, and the day-to-day operational plan, the budget plan, the action plans. Those things are married very tightly and roll up to the strategic plan or the ultimate goals and objectives of the company. Has that been your experience, Rick? That when you've seen good examples, you've been able to see where the short term and the long term marry up well?
But, you know, without a doubt, you know, when you talk about the short term and working with a current client right now, and this is a live example, they asked me to put together you know, a quote to help them with their next strategic planning process. They'd used their previous firm for the last 4 to 7 years and felt it had gotten a little sour and a little stale. So they asked me to put that together along with some other projects we're working on. And lo and behold, as I asked him where he was at with things currently, if he was really ready for that, I come to find out that they're moving their plant in a major plant move in March. I find out that they have 7 or 6 new product launches between now and the end of the year that in one of the parts of the engagement we had, they just let go of their production manager. They recently hired a VP of sales who's not working out, which is another issue we're working on right now. And they're going to try to go into strategic planning in November. Now, to me, that's a little bit on the ludicrous side. And so at least I got him to understand the fact, and the owner did call me and say, you know what, you're right. We're going to hold off strategic planning, get our ducks in a row. So when we come back in our next segment, we're going to talk about kind of auditing the process and where you're at and looking at where you are today and why that's so critical in moving forward. So I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. I'm here with my friend and associate, John Gannon. We're going to talk about kind of auditing your business and kind of in the book Good to Great, it talks about, face the brutal facts, I think it mentions. But we'll come back from the break. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. If you've got questions, call us at 866-472-5790 or email us at rick@thieg.com. And John and I will be glad to see if we can help answer some of the questions you might have. So we'll see you after the break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just 2 salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on 2 incomes anymore, let alone 1. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
On with my guest John Gannon. I'm your host Rick Thiemann. We're live with our radio show called What's Leadership Got to Do with It? And this week and next week's session we're talking about strategic planning. We spoke just before the break about how a business is not, or how a budget's not a business plan, it's an operating plan. And even it's interesting to find that many organizations who develop a sales and marketing plan thinks that's their business plan. It's their sales plan, it's not their business plan. But I want to talk a little bit with John about kind of the what I call the ignorance and arrogance of business, and I alluded to that earlier by the article that came out this morning around how Sony's acquisition and Quaker Oats' acquisition of Snapple and how those debacles emerged. But, you know, when I want to talk about the ignorance and arrogance of business, it was best portrayed by a quote that I saved and I saw in 1981 was by Walter B. Wriston, who was then the chairman of the board of Citicorp. He said that the philosophy of the divine right of kings died hundreds of years ago, but not, it seems, the divine right of inherited markets. Some people still believe there is a divine dispensation that their markets are theirs and no one else's now and forever. No businessman can control the market when the customer decides to go somewhere else. So what I refer to is kind of the ignorance and arrogance of business. You know, how many of those deals that had gone bad, you know, the AOL Time Warner deal, how much of that was arrogance on the CEO's part to drive the business? And how does that wind up creating a debacle for shareholders and employees alike? You know, on a smaller note, I went to work years ago as the vice president of sales and marketing for a firm, and I was asked to grow sales and increase market share, and one of the things I found was that we were losing customers left and right. So I went and did a study for 90 days with operations and found out that we had an 83% on-time delivery record in that 90-day period. And the owner told me that I was full of, and I won't use the four-letter word he used, but, you know, just told me that his understanding of the business, his arrogance that people believed he had a great company was just full of hot air. But the ignorance and arrogance story then speaks to the fact of why businesses don't succeed and what happens. So, John, what's been some of your experience around business owners or presidents whose arrogance get in the way of understanding that the structure and the business and the plan of the business needs to take fold along with the people that he's got to engage that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think the cult of personality must take over at certain points on some of those deals, some of those projects. For me, when I have watched an acquisition work well, or when I've watched a business plan work well, you've been able to see, or I've been able to see, a clear buy-in, a clear cadence that's developed by the senior leadership of the organization, and that is then driven down or bought into by the rank and file, by the sales organization, even by the financial folks and all the support teams in the back office. When it works well, there is a clear vision that's laid out, there is a clear plan that's laid out, and they buy in from the acquiring company, and really, in the best cases, there has been a clear buy-in from the company that's been acquired. We've all seen deals where there was a hostile acquisition, where the acquired company, the company that was being acquired, the management team left, the numbers coming through due diligence didn't quite foot the way they should, all different types of things. When an acquisition happens at the best level, it happens when there is a willing acquirer and a willing acquired, if I'm making sense.
Well, yeah, absolutely. One of the books I read not so long ago said people support what they help create. And I think what I've seen and witnessed in the 20 years that I've done this is that I've seen a lack of recognition that top management needs to take this down into the rank and file as and help them understand how they're an integral part, and the roles that they play to support that are just critical. And to John's point is that if you don't have the force behind you, if the force doesn't know which way to go, you know, people will just wander around instead of having a common cause to rally around. So I want to talk about vision as we get into the rest of this program and vision and where that goes. But right now we're kind of talking about auditing where you're at and evaluating where you're at. And so when I say auditing where you're at, and so, John, think about where I want to go with this as you come up with some examples. But when I talk about auditing where you're at, one of my clients who's a minority-owned business said, you know, I want to pay my sales manager. I want to figure out a compensation plan to pay my sales manager. And I said, well, first of all, how does your sales manager follow the business plan? He says, well, we don't really have a business plan. I said, well, don't you think we need to develop a business plan before we figure a pay structure for sales manager? He says, well, we're successful in making money. He says, we've got a good EBITDA. He says, we've just kind of always been successful in just doing what we're doing what we do best. And I said, yeah, but the problem lies in that you want to create a package for your sales manager, and here's the dynamics of that company. Being a minority-owned company, they thrived on minority-owned contracts. Well, the owner's in his 60s. His son is American-born. So if the owner dies and the son takes over the business, he'll lose all those minority contracts. So why not develop a business plan that creates 50% in minority business and 50% in non-minority business to balance your business, and then make sure that no contract of the on the minority contract side, no contract is more than 15% of the total revenue. It's something that makes sense of having kind of the management by objectives piece that you're going to drive. So John, from your experience, where have you seen that show up as well?
Well, I think the best way to be able to look forward is to make sure you have a very clear understanding of where you've been, what brought you to where you are today, and a very clear objective. And, Rick, I think having an outsider look at you once in a while is a very good idea to make sure that you're getting an objective view of who you really are at that point in time. Where do you fit in the marketplace? Where do your products line up against your competitions? What is your acceptance in the marketplace? How do your customers perceive you? And unfortunately, when you ask those questions of yourselves, unless you are brutally, brutally honest and you've got a management team that's supporting you that can really look you in the eye and tell you the way it is without any fear or any brown nosing or anything of that nature, you've got to have somebody who can help you from the outside who's going to be able to give you a good look. So before you can go forward, you've got to understand what brought you, what was successful in the past, and where are you specifically at this moment in time.
But, you know, here's another great example of that in just some of the consulting work I've done. One of my clients was a small firm, we work with all size firms. We have several clients that are Fortune 100, some clients that are Fortune 500, clients that are in that 50 million to 100 million, 100 million to a billion. But this particular client was 20 million in sales, and for four consecutive years had not been able to grow, even though they had a business plan in place. And when I came over and started looking at the records and things, I looked at the customer base from 92 to 96. And in 96, there were 253 customers on the books, and in 92, there were 248 customers on the books. And to make a long story short, there were only 79 customers left on their original list of 253 in 96 that they had in 92. Yet they had 19 salespeople, and on average, they brought in 100 new customers every year and lost 100 new customers every year. So to John's point, and that is, sometimes we think we're doing well, we kind of poo-poo or shun the idea of having an outsider come in and audit our business. And in this case, this is what we found when we audited our business of why the business wasn't growing as one of the things that emerged. So, you know, John, you've worked for some significant companies. So what would, you know, one of the, and we won't mention this client, but one of the companies you went to, which you and I did some work in, just didn't seem to have their act together, and you made a choice to leave there. What was the driver behind that? And the reason I'm asking, John, this is because without a strong business plan, we lose good people. So, John, from your background and your experience, you go into an organization with visions of grandeur and high expectations and a huge role and responsibility in an international company, a European company playing in an American market. What were the challenges that you faced as it relates to that whole strategic planning piece?
I think from their standpoint, there was an unrealistic, because of the, they were operating in a market share with a market share in Europe where they controlled 75-80% of the market. And I'm not using real numbers, but it was in that range. Coming to the States, they were operating at 8-12% share of market. So a huge differential between Europe and the U.S. or the North American marketplace. From my standpoint, what was lacking as we entered into the strategic planning process is we were trying to develop a vision for this business looking ahead 3 to 5 years, was we had a lack of focus upon key elements that were going to cause this growth. We had no focus. We were looking at transferring the model that had worked well in Europe and bringing it over lock, stock, and barrel into North America. And the reality was that the organization wasn't ready for it, the products weren't ready for it, the channel was not prepared for it. We did not have a clear understanding of the vertical markets in which we wanted to play. And really, we had a lack of focus, and we were not willing to look at our competition as benchmarks. So as you're beginning the strategic planning process, what you need to do is to make sure you understand what brought you to where you are today, objectively, warts and all, and who are the models or what are the benchmarks that you need to follow? You need to keep one eye on these benchmarks as you lay out the strategic plan. And then, of course, you need to figure out what are the milestones along the strategic plan or this operational plan even that are going to guide you and let you know that you're still on the path to success. And one of my issues with this firm was we were not willing to look at the benchmarks, and we were not willing to put firm milestones in order to track our success and failure going forward. And what happened was every time, like a bass in the lake, every time a shiny lure went by, we started chasing the lure, and another lure would go by and we'd chase that one. And we never headed in the direction that we had spent many hours trying to establish.
All right, so we're about ready to go to our next break. When we come back from a break, we're going to talk about kind of vision, and we'll kind of continue the thought around auditing where you're at, evaluating where you are today to make sure you can move forward tomorrow. We're going to talk about vision and its critical impact and how vision plays a huge impact on strategic planning and even some of the things that John was alluded to in his last description there. But I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with the Executive Group. You can find us on the Internet at www.theeg.com. Or write me at rick@theeg.com and answer any of your questions, and John and I will be glad to get back with you. We're going to head to break, and we'll see you when we get back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just 2 salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with the Executive Group. You can find us at www.theeg.com, along with my guest, John Gannon. And John and I have worked together in two previous companies where he's worked. We're now working together on working with clients to develop a better strategic planning model. At the break, John and I were just kind of laughing about so many companies that he and I worked for, as well as companies I've consulted with in 20 years, don't seem to get or seem to think that strategic planning is some easy thing that you can go get locked in a room for 2 days and come away with a strategic plan. And many of the consultants that I've talked to about to do strategic planning, that's their model, is they get away for a weekend retreat and spend a couple days locked up in a boardroom somewhere or some retreat area somewhere and go off and come out and voila, becomes our strategic plan. And John, you had a funny comment. You want, if you'll share that with everyone.
Well, with a lot of large corporations, at least on the divisional level, when you boil it down, it becomes a checkbox that's required in October and November. It's like pay increases are in April, and so it's October. It must be strategic planning time. And usually, the net result is getting a budget.
Yeah.
And as you write in your book, Rick, budgeting is not a strategic plan.
Right. So, you know, another thing, too, that I've seen is that another comment I've got in the book is strategic planning is not forecasting sales and then determining what should be done in the essence to fulfill the pipeline and the forecast. Strategic planning really takes a look at some hard and fast rules, which we'll get into in the next show. But, you know, one of the things that we're talking about was auditing your business and evaluating where you're at and why you're not growing. And in John's example of this European company, it's not unlike another European company I worked for, which was one of the largest companies in the plumbing arena that had a huge market share. They were the Kohler of Europe, if you will, trying to operate here in the U.S., and they were a client for quite some time. But lost a lot of market share because they weren't willing to pay the price of things they needed to do, and also believed that it was a cakewalk to use European design in bathroom fixtures in U.S. design. It just didn't work. So the vision, which I want to get to in a moment, is critical, and how vision is important to getting people to rally behind you. But to kind of bring closure on the audit standpoint, you know, to John's point, is that, you know, having an outside firm, of course, obviously I'm plugging our firm, but having an outside firm come in and give you their two cents sometimes is nothing more than telling you what you already need to know. As a matter of fact, one of the clients I just did an audit for in their process, and then we had a half-day debrief after kind of 2 days of auditing their operation. You know, the two brothers look at me and says, well, you're really not telling me anything we don't already know. I said, yeah, but you haven't done anything about what you already know. And they said, well, yeah, that's true. So sometimes it's nothing more than telling you what we already know, but sometimes it's uncovering things you haven't seen before. So auditing your business is a critical piece, and having some type of audit process is critical. But then the next thing that should happen before you go into that strategic planning piece is, so what's the vision supposed to look like? And how do we understand how to create a vision and create a future? And a couple examples that I want to give real quick come out of a book called Paradigms, if you haven't read it. But we talk about vision. Some interesting statements emerged out of this book, and it says Charles Duell, who was a director of U.S. patents in 1899, said everything that can be invented has been invented. Robert Millikan, who was a Nobel Prize winner in 1923, said that there's no likelihood man can ever tap the power of the atom. And the guy by the name of Simon Newcomb in 1902 said flight by machines heavier than air is impractical and insignificant, if not utterly impossible. Therefore, speaks the ignorance and the lack of wisdom by businesses. Another key statement was the chairman of IBM, Thomas Watson, in 1943 said, I think there's a world market for about five computers. And the now defunct Digital Equipment, who was then president, Ken Olson, said there's no reason for anyone to have a computer in their home. So when we talk about vision, one of the most prolific examples in the book Paradigms, and if you folks haven't read it, the listeners haven't read it, please pick it up. But in the book called Paradigms, it really speaks to the fact of the Swiss in 1968 owned 65% of the world market share in clocks and 80% of the profits. Yet by 1980, the Swiss owned less than 10% of the world market and less than 20% of the dominated profits. The interesting thing was that the quartz watch took out the Swiss handmade watch that kind of wound up, but the Swiss are the ones who invented the quartz watch. But in 1967, when it was presented at the Research Institute in Neuchâtel, Switzerland, the two engineers who designed the quartz watch were laughed right out of the building. Why is that? Because of people's paradigms. Why did Bethlehem Steel, in such a great heyday, have their lunch eaten by Nucor Steel? Why did Circuit City, one of the most prolific marketers, go almost belly up? So when we talk about vision and John's point of getting people to rally around that, you know, unless there's a common cause for people to rally around, most people are going to just wander around. And probably the greatest example that I've come across is in 1961, JFK, in a special joint session of Congress, said the U.S. should set a goal of landing a man on the moon and returning them safely to Earth by the end of the decade. And yet in 1969, that vision became reality. But the interesting thing was, in 1964, a scientist came forth and said, the odds are now that the U.S. will not be able to honor the 1970 man lunar landing date set by Mr. Kennedy. You know, vision, just people just don't get it when it comes to vision and strategic planning. So, John, as you've tried to work for organizations, let's talk about vision from what you've seen and observed in those kind of organizations.
Well, one of the things that's frustrated for a guy like me who is prone to action is to be sequestered to come up with this year's vision statement. It makes me go blind. To talk about this year's vision statement and to get hung up in the semantics, should we say are, is, were, could be, might, getting hung up in the language of the vision statement is not nearly as important as having a clear understanding of where you want this company, this division, this business to be in the next 3 to 5 years. And I think any of us who have been involved in corporate America have had that retreat where you spent the whole time trying to come up with a lobby-worthy vision statement, something that can be framed and hung in the lobby for everybody to see. That's not really what I have in mind with the vision statement. What I'm looking for is, if you have been successful in being a low-cost supplier to the industry, and you feel that the most attractive sales and marketing space for you is to maintain that role as the low-cost supplier into the market, into that industry, and you've audited yourself, you've looked at the market attractiveness, you've gone through the four bullet points that I talked about earlier, if you've done that and it makes sense to be the lowest-cost supplier, then, by golly, 3 to 5 years out, make sure that you are still the lowest price, lowest cost, high quality supplier in the market.
So in kind of wrapping up, as we close out today's show, you've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It with my friend and host and guest, John Gannon. John and I are available to answer your questions at rick@thieg.com or call us at 1-800-666-4727-5790. Join us next week as John and I continue the conversation as we move it forward or play it forward into getting your business off the mark. Thanks for listening in, and hope to hear you back next week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It?
Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.